absolutely the best years of our lives. Two lads travelling the world in a van. We would travel in this Merck Sprinter van, pull up at the World Championship trials, and pardon my French, but it was actually called the bullshit van, because the night before any World Championship, our van would be the hub of people to come to. We'd put the kettle on and the biscuits would be broken out. We'd have a cup of tea and then Doug would come down with James and we'd just chat.
Hello and welcome to episode 74 of the Trials Australia podcast. I'm your host, David Grice. Just a reminder that if you're enjoying this podcast, to share it with your friends. We're available on all major podcast platforms, so remember to subscribe and all episodes will be automatically delivered to your device. Also, don't forget about our new Facebook group. Search Facebook for Trials Australia podcast community and come join the discussion. This episode is sponsored by GasGas. Right now, the 2021 TXT Racing 250 and 300 are available from your GasGas Trials dealers with some fantastic deals while stocks last. We are a global podcast, so please inquire through your local dealers. However, in Australia, the dealers are the Hell Team, Revolution Trials, PTR Engineering, Moto Dynamics, and Rock Hopping SA. On the 2020 TXT 250 and 300, there is a $2,500 factory rebate applicable. And on the 2021 250 and 300, there's a $1,500 rebate available. For those in the market for a higher end product, you won't be disappointed. Even the 2021 250 and 300 GP models have a $1,500 rebate available as well. This podcast is also sponsored by the Hell Team. As well as the place to go for new and used bikes, the Hell Team are a global supplier of parts and accessories for trials. They have the best gear from S3, Mots, Jitsi, Aero, and much more. Importantly, though, they're also a great resource for technical tips and advice. If you go to their website and have a look at the tech support page, you'll see heaps of great resources for a range of bikes. For GasGas owners, for example, there are workshop manuals, parts books, and even some preparation guides for doing the Scottish Six Day. There's similar docs for Scorpa, Sherco, Yotagas, TRS, and Beta. There's also a general info page, which is great for all bikes, with advice and guidance on changing tubeless tyres, wheel truing, and torque setting charts. You can find all this and more at the Hell Team website. Please visit www.thehellteam.com. In today's conversation, I'm chatting with three very talented people, Dan Hemingway and his two boys, Harry and George. The Hemingways have been mentioned heaps on the podcast thus far. Dan spent years chasing the British, European and World Trials Championships alongside his brother Ben and cousin Dougie Lampkin before departing into a 10-year hard enduro career. We reminisce with Dan on, as he describes it, some of the best times of his life travelling in his Mercedes Sprinter van for the sport he's so passionate about. We talk about how he went from trials to hard enduro, a year where he was only one of nine people to finish Erzberg, and also the impact injuries have taken on his career. Now, as Dan's boys, Harry and George, are coming of age, they too have shown some real talent on two wheels. In trials, they've already won British Youth Championships, and now the three of them are making an attack on the British, European and World Championships. We talk about the boys' accomplishments thus far and their ambition for their careers. I thoroughly enjoyed this chat, and I've had heaps of listener requests to get these guys on the podcast, so I suspect a lot of you will like this one as well. I hope you enjoy my chat with the Hemingways. The Hemingway family, welcome to the Trials Australia podcast.
Thank you very much, David.
Thank you for having us.
It's my absolute pleasure. So we've got Dan and your two boys, Harry and George. I've heard your names plenty of times on this podcast already. In fact, Harry, when I was interviewing Dan Thorpe, I think you were scaring him. That was the general consensus, is that you were giving him nightmares about how someone so young can have so much potential.
Yeah, no, we're very lucky around us to be riding with people like, and others like Richard Sadler and everyone like that. So yeah, it's really good. It's really brought me on this year.
Yeah. I've seen some home videos that you've been fortunate enough to share, Dan, and geez, the boys, an impressive group of talent. George, you're no stranger as well. You've recently taken on the big bikes, haven't you? And you seem to be doing great.
Yeah, I moved on to the 125. Was it last year? And then, yeah, I think I love it now. Yeah, it's a big improvement is the bike. And
yep.
Yeah, excellent. I'm excited.
Fantastic. We've got to talk about a lot of things. We would love to hear the boys and where you're going, but if it's all right with you, Dan, we'll start with you. And I understand that you're part of the Lampkin Mafia. So why don't you take us through the story, the origin story, if you would, of where it all began for you?
Oof, where do we start? I suppose really we ought to start with my father, who started riding trials early in his youth.
Yep.
When he was a farmer. So my grandparents have a farm in East Keswick, and my dad worked on the farm in East Keswick, and he was very handy with mechanicking and mending things and stuff like that, and would always tinker with bikes. And trials was something that he fell into with a local guy called Les Smith, who would run the Weatherby Club trials. And so really it was my father who started the trials riding in our family. And along with that, my dad would go to events, and my father's sister, my aunt Isabel, would go along with him. And that's where my aunt Isabel met Martin Lampkin.
Right.
So my auntie Isabel married Martin Lampkin. Right. So that's the link between the Hemingways and the Lampkins.
Okay. Thank you for clearing that up. That was good. I was wondering.
Yeah, everybody really asks that. So my dad would ride trials with Malcolm Martin, Uncle Mart, Ross Shepherd, people like that. These are all quite famous names, obviously, a lot of people have heard of. And then really what happened was we've always grown up around bikes. So in the 6 week, which in England, the schools break up for generally 6 weeks in summertime.
Yep.
What would happen is either Dougie or Harry Lampkin would come to our house for 3 weeks, or we would go to their house for 3 weeks. We'd split it. Generally, they would come down here because obviously Dougie and Harry's grandparents were down here. So right. We'd spend up to 6 weeks just riding bikes and being generally horrible, dirty boys running around in mud fields in the farm, in the pond down at the bottom of the farm, riding bikes. Wasn't so much, not like seeing my two now who are taking it serious. We've got a purpose-built trials park in the backyard. We were just lads between 9 and 15, just generally just having fun and messing about on bikes and scooters and push bikes and swimming in ponds and rivers and streams, and generally just being horrible. Because my grandparents lived on the farm, and also Dougie and Harry's grandparents lived on the farm. It didn't really sort of get serious for everybody until, I don't know, 16, 17 years old. We did the British Championship trials as youths, but it was never quite to the same, I don't know, dare I say, professionalism as we all do now.
Yeah, I think that's probably an interesting point, because if the one thing as an outsider looking in at the attack you guys are about to embark on the British, the world's, the Europeans, it looks like you're really gearing up. It's really a professional thing. It's an outright plan, whereas it sounds like it was much more organic early on in your youth, where you guys were just mucking about, having fun on the farm and just playing on bikes, and it just evolved from there.
Yeah, definitely. I think the tipping point started earlier for us, whereas the tipping point for Doug and Graham and my brother and myself was a little bit later on. I always remember sort of being 17 years old, and the first ever European Trials Championship I went to was with my uncle Mart. Took us in his Blue Transit van, which was just, it was basically just the Lampkins. They have a engineering business, so it's the Lampkins Engineering Transit van, bundled myself, Doug, and another called Graham Jarvis into the van. Uncle Mart took all three of us.
Wow.
So we all three went to Belgium as our very first European Trials Championship event. And so we were 17 at the time. We went out there. I think Doug, from memory, finished 6th or 7th or something like that in the event. Graham finished 9th or 12th, somewhere around there. And I was just outside the top 15, I think I was 17th. And I always remember the journey on the way home with my Uncle Mart. And we were all sort of trying to sleep. And Belgium for us then was a long way away. First time we'd all travelled abroad riding bikes. We were all sort of on the kip, sort of trying to as young lads on this bench seat in the front of a transit van. And my uncle Mark turning to him and going, right then, is that it? Is this what we're doing? And I just remember Doug turning to my uncle Mark and going, yeah, this is it, Dad. This is what I want to do. And it didn't really cross my mind at the time, but that was the pivotal point for Doug, really.
Wow.
That was him saying, him and Matt almost agreed, this is the direction we're going. We're going to be, you know, trials, what was to be, multi-world champions. But this is where we're going. We're not playing with golf. We're not messing about on a farm. We're going trials riding. And I remember me and Uncle Matt dropping us all off. And and saying to my father that, you know, what a great weekend it was, and this is it. This is our full attack. We've come away with a taste of it, sixth place, and Graham 12th, and Dan just out top 15. What do you think? We're having a go. And at the time, I'd just started work, so it didn't really cross my mind, but that was where Doug wanted to go. Whereas with us, our sort of, our take on it is, I remember when the boys were young and I was away, probably at Erzberg or somewhere like that, and getting a phone call from my wife, Emma, and saying, Harry's just won a British championship and George has, you know, just won a British championship in his class. And I remember on the way home from Erzberg thinking, not just because of the injuries, but simply because I've got two young lads that are showing real promise. And my wife's putting a lot of time and she's doing a lot of the travelling and taking them everywhere. I mean, mum and dad were doing the same, you know, their grandparents. And I remember thinking, like, this is... So that was my pivotal turning point for the boys. That was where I thought, I've got to stop and I've got to put all my efforts into these lads now. And yeah. It's paid off.
Yeah. So that's a fantastic sort of assessment of how you've pivoted from your career. But I don't want to skim over it because it was quite impressive CV. So, you know, it sounds you've in that story, you've gone from just on the cusp of working, doing trials with your cousin Dougie through to hard enduro. But what were some of the milestones in between? So you were competing in British youth championships and then you moved to doing Europeans and Worlds as well. So
yeah, my British youth career wasn't lightning. We had some good results, fifth place and things like that. But there was always, you might have seen with Harry, he's quite a small lad. I was always very small. I'm not using that as an excuse because that isn't an excuse. You can see Harry's quite a small lad, but very talented. I mean, skill levels are fast. So youth-wise, not lightning. Some good rides, some fifth places in the British Championships. I did kickstart, which was an eye-opener a few times. Really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And then we got into the adults and then came of age a little bit in the adults and rode adult British Championships for a good few years. I finished eighth overall in that. This is in a nice deep field of your Steve Thomas, Wayne Braybrooks, Rob Sartins, John Lampkins, Robert Crawford, Steve Colley, all these.
Oh my God, it's the who's who.
British trials at that time was just on fire. I'm not saying it isn't now because I think we've got a really good depth now, even though it's spread a lot further in classes. I think we've got a good depth of trial drive at the moment.
Yep.
And then went to European rounds with my brother.
Now, did that burning years. For just Dan, just on that. So the decision to start doing Europeans, how did you make that formative decision to go, I think I want more than just the British Championship. I want to tackle Europe as well.
We didn't like getting left behind and we could see it, what everybody else was doing. And at the end of the day, Ben and I, we just love trials and we just love traveling as well. They do call Ben the playboy of trials because we've just traveled and competed for many years. And I'm 46 now. Obviously 17 was the first time I ever went to Belgium with my Uncle Martin. We haven't stopped traveling since. We've never put it to bed. We've always done something with either mountain bikes or enduro or trials or something. We've loved traveling and competing. We used to go to the local pub on a Wednesday night and they all used to go, what's happening this weekend? Me and Ben would go, oh yeah, we're in Italy and then we go to France and then it's Spanish world champion. And we go, how do you afford it? And we go, because we don't sit in the pub like you do, Wednesdays, Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays, and spend all our money. We just put all our money into pot and go in our Mercedes van and travel the world. We were seven, 8 weeks away sometime, get the head around it. But yeah, that
does sound good though. If you're doing something that you're passionate about, like it's easy, I think, to throw yourself so heavily into a sport. If it
is best years, really best years of our lives. Absolutely the best years of our lives. Two lads traveling the world in a van, meeting some of your best friends at world championships. Quick glance over, our van was a Mercedes. Still actually got it in the yard, would you believe? We can't get rid of it. It's an heirloom family. So we would travel in this Merck Sprinter van and pull up at the world championship trials. And pardon my French, but it was actually called the bullshit van because, and the backstory to this is, the night before any world championship, our van would be the hub of people to come to. So Sam Connor, he was always riding the world championship. He would come with Tim, get into our van, sit in the van in the awning, we'd put the kettle on and the biscuits would be broken out, we'd have a cup of tea, and then Doug would come down with James Lampkin. This is when Dougie was domineering world championship trials. He'd come and sit in our van, call it the bullshit van. We'd sit in the van drinking tea, eating biscuits. Doug would drink decaffeinated tea because he didn't want to have the shakes for the day after. And we'd just chat, and it was generally just bullshit chat, you know, just chatting about the day, whatever. We would all be complaining that sections were too hard. Doug would be complaining that sections were too easy. but we would be sat in this van until sort of 10:30, 11:00. And then they'd all disappear off in the morning. We'd all wake up and it would be race day and it would be completely different. Doug would walk past you in the paddock. Not being rude, but he could walk past you in the paddock because he was totally focused. Where me and Ben were still chatting, still going on about last night, we'd see Sam Connor or somebody else, and we'd all be just chatting away, whereas Doug would be completely blinkered. But that's, you know, that, yep. Like you say, best years of your life.
But what you've described there is just gold. Like, that's the stuff. That's the intangible fabric of even the trials paddock today, even at club level, catching up with your friends and all that sort of nonsense you talk over a campfire. It's pretty unreal. So how did you go
Trials. Trials summed up. You know, that's trials summed up because that's, like you say, such a sociable sport is trials.
Yeah, absolutely. How did you go from trials to hard enduro? What I'm curious to know is, at some point, did you just go, oh, listen, I'm not enjoying trials anymore? Or did the lure of hard enduro take your fancy? Like, how was that decision there?
So Ben and I had done best part 10, maybe 12 years traveling the world and European rounds, chasing that elusive point for Ben in the world championships. Ben had some cracking results in the European championships, you know, finishing sixth. Because I used to mind for Ben. I gave up riding the European championship. Because when we first started, we went with no minders. And it quickly came apparent to me that you needed somebody to help you minding-wise. You know, we were traveling with Lettenbecker and they'd all have minders. And they would all be just beating us. We weren't getting the results that I felt we could have done. So I gave up riding and minded for Ben. He had some good results in the European rounds, but we never got the world championship point that he was always searching for.
Right.
That's a story for Ben to take up, really. That's what you need to speak to Ben about. But what happened was, so I got married in 2003, and I'm not saying for one moment that stopped me from traveling, because it didn't. Emma has never, ever stopped me from traveling. She's always supported what I wanted to do. She's been brilliant. So in 2003, I got married, and then Ben went and worked for Doug, 04-05, and I still wanted to do something. So I went and did a couple of mountain bike races with some friends. Ben came as well. He did the same. We did some mountain bike races abroad. And then it was in about 2008, or I'd always had an enduro bike from 2005 anyway. So I'd been doing some British enduros and stuff like that. Like you said, some war events and some old school enduros. And in 2008, a couple of friends of ours, Martin Craven and Mark Jackson, you'll have heard of Mark Jackson and Martin Craven, surely. They went to Würzburg, 08, and came home and just went, that is an incredible event. It's on a 9-hour mountain in the middle of Austria. 2,500 people start it, 25 people finish it, or 15 people finish it. And they just came back with such a sort of take on it. And Ben and I were sat in Martin's house watching it on TV with him, and he's going, oh, you've got to come. You know, it's the middle of July. It's red hot, 30 degrees. He's riding an enduro bike up these massive mountains. You've got to come and do it. And we went, yeah, I don't know if we're bothered anymore. We're not bothered for that. We're doing other stuff. Anyway, we came home, and the day after, we talked about it, me and Ben, and I said, you've got to get a bike, Ben. We're going to have to go do this. And he went, yeah, I think I have, haven't I? So Ben ended up buying a bike as well. And then in 09, we just did the same, loaded up the van, the BS van, me and Ben, and drove out to Austria. And we'd also spoke to Doug as well. And Doug had said, yeah, I'm going to go do it. Part of a Red Bull thing. Red Bull wanted to go because it's a big Red Bull event. So we all went, met everybody there. And so got to this huge event. And it was as described to us. It was this huge iron ore mountain that was just overtook this small village in Austria. Drove up there. And it was carnage. It was madness. There's thousands and thousands of people. We were from going from the world rounds where we were almost known, and we were nothing. We were just this little pinprick in this huge event, which didn't matter to us. It was a completely different scenario. Doug was still Dougie Lampkin because that's what he was. And we were Dougie's cousins. And no longer was he our cousin. We were his cousins. And I remember going there, and we met the press officer, Martin Kettner, and he sort of took a few details down. And I even a bit of trials. We both qualified. And I qualified second on the grid, so second row, which was generally where Jarvis used to qualify. Not ideal, but not disastrous.
Yep.
And we set off. And it was when Doug was airlifted off. So we got past Carl's dinner, and we got to a place called Dynamite, and dropped into this section. I remember them stopping me at the top of this section and going, race has stopped, air ambulance is coming. And I went, oh, sugar. And I went, who is it? And they went, it's your family. And immediately I thought it was Ben. So I put my bike down, run to the top of this precipice on this cliff, and I'm shouting, Ben, are you there? Are you there? Panicking a little bit, thinking, God, he's hurt. And I remember him shouting back, no, it's Doug, like that. And I'm like, whoa, like that. Not even thinking about where we were in the race or position-wise and stuff like that. And the woman who stopped us went, okay, at the moment you're seventh. And she went, wow. Yeah, you're line seventh in the event. And I went, wow, I have second row. So I went, okay, so who's in front? She went, Graham, Doug, your brother, Andreas Lettenbecker, Taddy, people like that. And I'm thinking, wow, we've just driven from England just to have a crack at this event. And all of a sudden, Ben's up there in wherever it was, fourth place, and I'm in seventh. And we finished that event. And then that was again the pivotal tipping point of us to go to Hard Enduro, because we crossed that line. And then all of a sudden, we weren't just Dougie's cousins who have traveled from England to have a go at this event. We were finishers of the hardest Enduro on the planet. And not only finishers, yep, but sort of Ben was fourth, I was seventh. And it was like two brothers have just come in and there's only been nine finishes. And it was like,
wow,
all of a sudden. So that was really why from there on, we got that taste of a little bit of success and traveling the world again. And then we just came home and said, yep, let's plow ourselves into this then.
So you did about 10 years of professional hard enduro, where if we were to pigeonhole you in a category or a discipline, it was more hard enduro for about 10 years thereafter.
Yeah, we focused on hard enduro because we like the Scott Trial for us in England is our favorite event of the year.
Yep.
So we obviously like suffering. So hard enduro, well, it's true, isn't it? Yeah. So hard enduro is just a suffer fest. You ask anybody if they enjoy hard enduro, there's very few people say, oh, I love it. Yep. He did love it.
Yeah, yeah. There's a few humorous videos going around the internet where hard enduro has been suggested as just voluntary torture. Yeah, it seems appropriate. But you've had a lot of success in trials. You've done 20-ish Scottish 6 days. I'm sure you can correct me.
25, yeah. Oh, 25 my God. Scottishes, yeah.
Runner-up 3 times as well. So it's
no, that's been, Ben.
Oh, that's Ben. Okay, I'll edit that.
Yeah,
out.
Yeah. So
this is why I was going, apologies, Dan, sorry.
Sorry, I should have sent you that, yeah.
No, it's all right. I will fix that and we will edit this out. And it's like nothing ever happened. It's just the magic of post-production.
You could leave that in. That's quite funny. Because we get mistaken all the time.
So I apologize. So, but you mentioned injuries. And so it sounds like that was a big decision maker as well. So have injuries been a large part of your sort of career?
Yeah, not intentionally.
No.
Yes, they have. But not always due to riding bikes, to be honest with you.
Okay.
A few other things. Yeah, BMXs have bitten me. Ankles on BMXs. Heavy machinery's done me a couple of times. Yeah, so. But yeah, I think really the breaking of my leg in 2014 when one of the iron ore boulders came off the hill, smashed into my leg and then just obliterated my leg.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's what happened, yeah.
Oh, so, that's awful.
Mm. Yeah, and again, on for a good result, but unfortunately, a ride just in front of me dislodged one of the big iron ore rocks. It came tumbling down, wiped my leg completely out. I just ended up with pins in the leg and everything. So that didn't help the job. That and dislocating my ankle on a BMX at Hope Technology, that was really the finishing, because that was more... That affects me more than anything else.
Right.
One of the injuries that has quite a funny tale was I was practicing for Erzberg with my brother Ben and I'd not crashed, but put my foot down on this jump and put my foot over the top of a rock and just dislocated all the toes off my foot, basically. Yeah, it's called a Lisfranc injury, back in the days when they used to do it because they couldn't get the feet out of stirrups off horses and it just used to dislocate all the toes off the feet. So they used to then amputate the foot. And I had the same. I did the same and went to the hospital and the guy who operated on me, who was a good friend still, Mark Farndon, he said, I don't think you'll ever ride again. You probably struggle to walk again, but I'm going to fix it. I'll do what I can. And he did do, and I spent a good few months in rehab. And then the week before Ben was leaving to go to Erzberg, I said to him, I'm just going to come with you to go practicing for a morning, see how I feel. I still got my entry, I might come. And he went, don't be silly. He says, you know, you're miles off. You're only just at your airboat. Anyway, I went and rode around. I said to Ben, I said, I'm going to come with you. I can't miss it. Even if I just come and help you, you know, chuck my bike in, I'll go see how we get on. And then I can help if I can, if I don't even qualify. Anyway, we qualified. And that year there was 9 finishes. Doug was second, Ben was third, and I was sixth. So 3 out of the 9 finishes were out of one family.
Oh my
God. And I was told that I shouldn't have gone and been there. That was one of the best results, really, because I shouldn't have even been there, if I'm honest. So.
Yeah, okay. So with all that culmination of injury, it's probably easy to see how the decision to pivot and focus on the boys was, of course, there. As you say, you're getting messages from your wife that, hey, they're winning championships and you're now, it's time to focus on them.
Yeah, 100%. That is definitely what happened. It was at the tail end, it was affecting, I was working still had me, I had a business and it was affecting that.
Yeah, okay.
And obviously the lads were coming on so strong and I just thought, I cannot miss them coming up through the ranks. So it wasn't really a difficult decision, 15, 16, somewhere around there, I think 16. I just said, right, that's it. Put the enduro bike away and let's concentrate on these two. And it wholeheartedly has been the best thing that I have ever done, because I get so much pleasure out of watching them progress. And I almost feel, I don't know, it's very strange. I feel nervous watching them than I ever was when I was riding. But
really?
I feel more sense of achievement when they have good results than when I was riding. I think it's just so much, I don't know, it's a different feeling. It's something that fills myself and my wife, Emma, but with so much pride and joy that when they have good results, it's fantastic. If I had to decide now whether to carry on working, jack it all in and concentrate on them, then it's a no-brainer. I'd be skint for the rest of my life, but I would 100% go with them and try and forward their careers more. That's where I'm at.
You know? Yeah. Okay. That's some real commitment and I'm sure the boys appreciate it. I'll bring Harry and George back in at this point. So Harry, that's an impressive pedigree. Was it always trials for you? Did you ever have a tried any other types of motorcycling, or was it just trials your native preference?
No, for me, it's always been trials. Since I was born, I've had bikes and then always watched Dad ride trials when I was born. And then 2.5, I got my first Ascot, 12.5.
Oh, wow.
And bragging that about the yard with Dad's old tyres laid on the floor. And then I got a PW50 for my first motorbike. And that had some use, did that bike. I loved it. It was, it was incredible. And then obviously I got a Beta 50, one of the automatic clutches. And that was good. I rode that for a bit. And then I got my first Ascot. At I think 6 years old maybe, and then from there on that's where I started riding competitions and then British Championships, and then I was D-class British Champion in 2014.
Wow. D-class British Championship in 2014, that's fantastic.
But I've always enjoyed riding mountain bikes as well. I got in 2012 my first full suspension mountain bike, which is a Santa Cruz Nickel, and it was the best mountain bike I've ever had. I loved it. It was a special bike, was that. And then it's always progressed onto my current bikes. And then
were you one of these kids that would get home from school and just ride till it was dark and just couldn't keep off the bikes when you got home from school?
Yeah, I was always, we've never been allowed consoles in our house. And for me, that's not been a problem at all, because with all this around us, you just come home from school, grab a bike from the garage and go and ride it with George.
So I've got the benefit of seeing the backyard behind Dan's shoulder. But for the listeners, just describe, what sort of land are you on there?
So we're on an old pig farm. It's what it is. And then at the bottom of our land, there's a fishing pond.
Yep.
We've also got a field where we put our mountain bike jumps in. And then what we call no man's land just below us, which has our trail sections in. Yeah. We've been very lucky to have what we do.
And George, so what was the state of the Ossets when Harry had finished with them? Were they still rideable?
Yeah, I think they were well kept by Harry. But yeah,
I imagine watching your brother and then your dad be riding around all the time, it must be an easy decision to do trials as well.
Yeah, it helps with them watching them. It really brings you on, get like tips from them.
Yeah, it's amazing because I've been watching some of the social media footage from you guys as I've been preparing for this interview. And it's amazing to see how someone of your stature can control themselves and the balance of the bike. It's just amazing. So first up, congratulations. You've got a lot of skill and a lot of talent. What have been your highlights growing up on the bike? So you've been out there doing British championships. Now looks like you're about to start European and world soon.
Yeah, I think first win on the British championship was in 2016. I had a D-class small wheel. Wow. And that's really where it started. And then a few others. And then we've got the European rounds next week.
Yep.
We're going to Italy. So I'm really excited because that can be my first proper big event. So
yeah, congratulations. So you're going to be competing in a European round of the European Trials Championship, and it's Italy next weekend.
Yep. I think I'll be in Harry's class as well. See how we get on.
Pressure's on, Harry. Pressure's on. So, Harry, how have you found it? Because you've obviously done a bit of traveling now with Europeans. You've also done some world rounds as well?
Yeah. So my first year in the Europeans was 2018.
Yep.
And it was just after the Santa Gosa 3-day trial was the first one in Castellet in Spain.
Actually, tell me about that. What was that like as a youth? It strikes me as a great trial looking from the outside in, but what was it like partaking in it? Because you all ride around as a bit of a family there, wouldn't you?
Yeah, the first year I rode Santa Gosa was with me, Dad and Ben went out in Ben's van. We left George and Mum behind, which would never happen now. and we rode out there for 3 days in what I think is hands down one of the best trials I've ridden, apart from the Mintex, which I'll talk about later.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, no, it was an unreal trial. You're riding in streams for 3 days. I think it's 30 sections, one big lap. Yep. And the last two sections are in the town. One's a hill climb, and it's a graded hill climb, actually. So how far up you get, the less points you get. And then the last section's an arena section, which it gets harder and harder as you get through the section. That's also graded. So the further you get, the least points you get.
Is the 3 days the same 30 sections?
No, they change the route for each day.
Okay.
So you get, 90 sections in the week. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Pretty unreal.
The head boggles as someone trying to organize a trial.
Come in and tell you, David, Harry was, were you 14 when you first rode that, Harry? 13?
No, 12. In 2017, 12 years old. Was the first year I rode that.
Oh my God.
So this is Harry at 12 years old riding a 3-day trial in Spain, which takes on the road work on an 80cc motorcycle.
Oh my God.
We're riding down the road and the police are just waving him through. That would never happen in England.
Yeah, where's your license? Stop. Registration. Yeah, insurance.
Exactly that.
Yeah.
And that's just sums up the Spaniards. They just obviously embrace the whole. It's a big event in Spain, and they've got it dialed in so that it's safe for the bikes to ride on the roads. But they're not checking a 12-year-old's license and his registration plate. They're just happy to see him. They were waving at him and giving him thumbs up. It was amazing.
Fantastic. So, Harry, you've done your Santa Gosa 3-day, and then you've also done some Europeans and some Worlds. So 2018 was your first World Championship.
First European Championship in 2018.
2018 was your first European. Thank you. And
And it was in Spain. And we went out there not knowing anything. We've never been to one. I'd never been to one, sorry. And knowing who was with me and in the class was the likes of Paul Martinez, David Fabian, and a few others, Harry Turner. And we went out there. I was on my 80. They were all on 125s in the international class. And
wow,
I had a decent day. Not so good rides with the... I had a bike problems that day. And it came to the end of the trial. And I went to see the results. And it said I was second. So
no
I couldn't
way.
Believe it. I was very happy. And then after that, we got told it was Poland the next round. So we said we better go to that then.
So you weren't even committed to going to Poland. That was like we'll see how we go. And it went well enough to justify going.
Yeah, because it was a Santa go. So we thought we might as well have a go. And then we said, we're going to have to do this. And then that was it. We went to Poland. I got a first and a second. And then the last round in Belgium, I managed to take the win. And it left me with the international title that year.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. So obviously at some point then you start thinking, oh, world rounds are next after the Europeans. But is there an age limit you have to be to reach the world?
Yeah, so it's 14 for the world championship in the 125 class. So I had to wait another year. And I did another year of Europeans and I think I was fifth overall. I had some good rides and some not so good rides. But that was in a different class, the one above.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, I was pleased with that. And then I went to the world rounds last year, which we were obviously scheduled in to go into all these places and Japan was being one of them. But then Corona hit and they all got cancelled. But luckily they managed to put a season together at the end of the year. And the first one was in France, 2-day event. And I think the first day I didn't have a great day. I was ninth, which was okay, but it's not what I wanted. And then I had a fifth. And it led on to having some good rides. I had a third in Pobladora and then 2-4 in Andorra. And then I think not a decent last round in Italy. I think a sixth and an eighth. But it left me in fifth overall in the championship for my first year. I was very pleased with that.
Yeah. Congratulations, mate. That is absolutely awesome. Yeah. And looks like you're ready to do another attack on the season this year.
Yeah. Feeling ready again. Obviously, the Europeans are cancelled this year. So I'm really looking forward to them this year. So I'm really looking forward to them this year. Can't wait to get out. All this winter riding. Hopefully, we'll see what we can do. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. We briefly interrupt this conversation to remind you that this podcast is sponsored by GasGas. While stocks last, GasGas are offering a $2,500 factory rebate on the 2020 TXT 250 and 300 bikes locally here in Australia, as well as $1,500 rebates on the 2021 models. Get in quick because these deals are only available while stocks last. Now back to our conversation. George, tell me about your preparations. What class are you going to be riding in this year?
This year I'll be in, for the European, I think it's the, what is it?
For the Europeans, it's the Junior Cup we're in, I think.
Yeah, that one.
Junior Cup. Okay. Yep. And so you're competing against what age group there, roughly?
I think it's the 16s, under 16s.
Okay.
So, yeah, 12 to 16-year-olds.
Yeah, okay. All right. And so that's going to give you a good spread of competition. And then do you have a time to wait until you can do the Worlds? Because it's that 14, is it still 14 at that cutoff?
Yeah, so I'm 13 now, so I'll do this season, and then next year I'll be in the world round. I've still got a year to wait, but I'm sure it'll come up quickly.
I'm sure it will. And what are you going to be doing domestically? This is a question to, so I guess, all three of you. So Harry, George, and Dan, what are you going to be doing like with British championships, and are you still going to be doing things like the Santa Goza 3-day and things like that?
The Santa Goza 3-day has been cancelled for this year.
Right, okay.
But we're all three will be riding the Adult British Championship. I'll be riding in the expert class, which is, it's Dan Thorpe. He rides that. It's a class that I rode when I was riding trials and finished second to James Lampkin a couple of years, thinking 01 and 02. So it's the same class as that. Harry and George will be riding the 125 class, but that does the same sections as me. So we all ride the same course. And this year, George has been given permission from the ACU to ride this 125 championship because he is still officially too young.
Fantastic flexibility, I think, in common sense, given his ability and capability on the bike, I guess.
It's taken a while. We've had this. We've campaigned for a long time. We always wanted Harry to move up a class a little bit earlier so he could ride against the adult championship or even a class above. And it's taken until now. There's a couple of other lads, Harry Turner and Jack Dance. So between Harry Turner, Harry Hemingway and Jack Dance, those three have always been just that little bit in front, if you like. And we've always wanted them to ride a class above, but the ACU have never really allowed it. But I think partly because of insurance and partly because they don't want everybody else jumping on it and saying, my lad wants to do it as well, and it causing a load of grief overall. Yeah. But this year, luckily for us, the ACU have allowed George to come up a year early into the 125 class, which is fantastic for George.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it'll do him wonders this year.
Yeah, absolutely. I keep hearing even club level. You guys are at a different level to me. But everything I hear is ride against the best people you can because it raises your level.
Yeah, 100%. You only have to watch George when he practices with Harry. He's always wanting to. And Harry's been in that position where he's very good at teaching himself, is Harry. So he's pushed his level, if you like, when we're at home on his own. He's never had anybody to chase because, admittedly, I can't do what Harry's doing now, and even Uncle Ben can't do what Harry's doing now. This new technique on the back wheel and stuff like that, we're miles off that. Give us a stream and they have no chance. But stickers on those rocks down there, and poor old Ben and I, we're not even getting a bike out. But you can see with George watches Harry, and it's really dragged George along with Harry, if you like. It's been fantastic.
Yeah, so, obviously last year when we were in our house and everything was shut, we had Jack Price and James Devil come over, and that helped me loads to watch them two ride and how they perform. So that helped me. That's been that's been a real help in my technique, learning these new techniques and how to ride properly. Yeah.
And so that was just like a concentrated period during lockdown. It hasn't been like an ongoing coaching relationship.
I wouldn't say it's been a coaching period, but just you can learn so much from watching them boys ride and how they ride. You pick up how they do stuff. With them coming down here, with having nowhere to ride, and watching them ride, it really helps you in that sort of way. And they always do say you should be doing this, and they do help out as well. Yeah, it's been amazing.
You've got to give a bit of a shout out to both James Dabble and Jack, because they have been really good for you two boys. Come down last year when we built the park, they were coming down because they were still practicing for World Championship trials because they were obviously still riding last year. Yes, but they were coming down, and they weren't selfishly just practicing on their own. They would also involve the boys and give them tips as well. So we've really got to say thanks to Jack and James for that. Yeah. I can teach them so much, but when it comes to the new techniques, I can see it, but I don't know how to do it. So for Jack and James to come down and show the boys how it's done, fair play. Hats off to them two lads. Really good. Really appreciated it.
So one of the things I've got a question mark over for you, Dan, is around the coaching and father relationship, because at some point, as you say, the boys are now exceeding your ability in certain areas and you can bring people in to help coach some of those things. But just generally, have you found that an easy dynamic?
I've always actually, because I was Ben's minder, I do watching and observing how things are ridden. And I quite like that. And I still, I'm not trying to blow my own trumpet or be big-headed, but I do think I'm not too bad at coaching and advising. I can't necessarily do it, but I know how it should be done and what technique should be used or what gear should be used or where the body position should be. And I'm ever-evolving as well. This new style of riding, I don't think it's necessarily needed everywhere. It gives you a completely different and versatile skill set. So this back wheel technique will not be used in the World Championships. I'll tell you, 100% won't be. Because it's still, it won't. You'll never see them sat on the back wheel and bouncing around in the World Championships because the sections are still quite traditional. It's still a non-stop rule, and the sections lend themselves to that non-stop rule still, hopefully. But everybody practices on the back wheel, and whether it's necessary or not, I'm not sure, but it is necessary to learn it and to have it in your bag, because there will be some day that you will need that. So there's no point dismissing it and saying, just because it's not used in the World Championship doesn't mean to say you have to practice it or you don't. But you do have to practice it. It's the way forward. And it's, you're watching, they're all still doing this, and they all practice like this all the time. But then they can switch back to traditional sort of style of riding when it comes to the World Championships, because the skill level is so high doing that type of riding that to drop down back to that, it's become second nature. And that's why we still ride club trials, because you've still got to ride.
I really sympathize with that, having a good diverse. So what are some of the local trials you're going to be looking forward to? The boys are too young to do the Scott yet, or are they able to?
Yeah, they're too young to do the Scott. The Scott trial for us, like I said to you, is one of our favorite. I mean, I have 17 spoons in the Scott, won gold, finished fifth. Ben, as you said, was second two or three times in that, kind of three times. So it's something that the boys are really looking forward to. As Harry picked up on earlier, there's a trial called the Mintex trial, which is
Tell me about that.
A mini Scott. It's a mini Scott. So it's on the Scott course. Harry can tell you. Harry might as well jump in and tell you a bit more about it. He's ridden it once. So
please do. Go, Harry.
And it's, I think, 50 miles, 50 sections. And it's exactly the same format as the Scott. Time and observation, a mark a minute, obviously. And then it's on the Scott course as well. So you do ride some of the sections in there in the Scott. And for me, that was one of my favorite events along with the Santiago, because I wouldn't say I like going fast, but I like things like that.
Yeah.
Flowing. And yep. It's just, for me, it was a really good event, riding the streams and racing across the moors, seeing if you can catch the person in front of you. Yeah. No, I love that event.
So in the Scott trial, I've never ridden it, but as I understand it, it's timed and observation. So there's this question mark of, am I going to stop and walk the section or am I not? And presumably you just have to keep going for it and barrel on through. If the Mintex is the same format, it's just you don't have the luxury of walking a section. So you might be caught off guard if you see an errant flag or something. You got to stay within the boundary.
Yeah, exactly. They make the sections pretty obvious, to be fair. And when you always get to a section, you shout to the observer, is it just there and then out of there or up that banking? And they go, yeah, that's it. So it's pretty, I wouldn't say hard, because it's still possible to miss a flag, but it's not like riding a club trail section blind.
Yeah, got it.
You can still,
yep,
and, got but it. The sections are still hard, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
This is a trial that George is really looking forward to this year as well. It's a little bit of a...
George.
Yeah, George can ride it this year as well. So, and there's a little bit of needle in the household because George is saying, I'm going to get you this year, Harry.
Yep. So, George, when is it? Do you know roughly what time of year it is? It must be coming up soon.
Yeah, I think it is coming up soon. Or is it on this year still?
October. Usually September, October time.
Okay, all right. So it's in your autumn. Yeah, okay. Yeah. And, George, have you had a chance to sort of practice that format before?
I just missed out last year with COVID. I think it was going to be the trail that I was going to ride. And then unfortunately it got cancelled. Hopefully it's still on this year because, yeah, it's one of those that I really want to ride. And, yeah.
Yep. Excellent, excellent. So, Harry, you mentioned before when we were talking that you were D-class British Championship, but I believe you've also won more than that.
Yeah, so I was British Champion in 2014, D-class, and then 2016 I was also C-class British Champion in the small wheels category, and then along with 2018, C, big wheel, British champion. And that was the last of, I think, that was the last time I was British champion because of COVID and things like that. But I've also, last year, I think I was third overall in a shortened 125 category championship. And yeah, that's.
And now it's going to be different this year because you're stepping up into the adults.
Yeah. So this year I'm in the same category as last year, the 125. Category, right. Which I also rode last year.
Got
at the Adult British Championship.
Understood.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And how about you, George? How have your achievements fared? You mentioned you were D-class champion.
Yeah, so I was also C-class medium wheel champion in 2017. So one after another.
Wow.
I think me and Harry were both British champion that year, which was a...
Oh, wow.
That was a good year.
God.
And then I was second in the C-class standard wheel in 2018.
That is some great form, boys. Well done. Harry and George, I'd be interested in your thoughts on what are some of your ambitions for the sport? We've talked about what you're doing. You're attacking the world rounds and you're Europeans. Maybe, Harry, I'll start with you. Where do you hope to go ultimately in your career?
For me, I'd love to become a professional trials rider and follow in my Uncle Doug's footsteps and Tony Bow and become as many times world champion as possible, like every other kid who wants to start out in their sport.
Yep.
And yeah, I think that's where I want to end up one day, is just being traveling the world, riding my bike, being a professional rider, because I love everything about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And given your trajectory, I dare say that's a realistic goal. How about you, George?
If I'm honest with you, it's the same as Harry. You always aspire to be the best you can in your sport, and hopefully it will come true. Yeah.
I wish you the absolute best. I'm sure you guys will do well. I'm really keen, though, for you guys to talk to the audience about some of your experiences and some of the tips and some of the techniques that have stuck with you and what we might be able to tell people on the outside of our sport? These are just usual questions. I guess I'll start with you, Dan. So what has been some of the tips that you've picked up over time that still stick with you today that you would like to pass on?
For trials, one of the biggest tips that was ever given to us was from my uncle Matt, who always said, do not take your last mark with you to the next section, because don't carry it with you. So if you have a bad five on section 10, don't go to section 11 thinking of that bad five. Leave it where it is, because it's done. Yep. You can't change it. It's there. It's on your scorecard. So you go to section 11 with a fresh mindset, and you've got to beat that next section. Because if you carry on, if you get upset with yourself over a mark, then it's going to affect your next ride. So you've got to try and leave it. And it's very difficult. You've got to try and leave it at the last section and then concentrate on beating the next section. So that was one of the biggest tips.
So the mental game. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Harry, how about you? Maybe something that James or Jack have taught you. What are some of the tips that have really stuck with you?
One of the things for me is just concentration, because trials, 9 times out of 10, you can do the section. But when you put it together with an observer, sometimes it all goes out the window and you forget everything. So just, I like to run through the section in my head before I go in, know what I'm doing, take my time, break it down. So I think, right, do this bit, get past that and think, right, this next bit, now I do this, and then just go on with that really. And it makes it a lot easier to get through.
So attention to detail, breaking down a section, and just trying to think through the steps involved. That's pretty good. And George, how about you? What are some of the tips that you take away?
I think for me, probably trying to beat the section, not the rider, not the other riders, but your competition.
Yep.
You go to the section, you think, you see another rider clean it. You don't go, right, I need to clean this now. You think, I need to beat this section, not the other riders. So I think that's helpful as well.
Yeah, very sage advice. And George, while we're with you, when you talk to your friends at school and you're telling them about, I'm going off to Italy for trials, how do you sell trials to them? Trials is a fairly well understood sport in Europe, but to someone on the outside of our sport, what do you say to them about trials and why they should potentially think about it?
Really, I think if they enjoy being with a friend riding a bike outside, I think that's the main part about it. You know, socializing when you're riding your bike. And then also having fun. It's a fun sport, and I would advise anyone to have a go at it.
Have you recruited any friends from school? Do you get them down to your place and have a go on the bikes? And have you managed to convince anyone to start it up?
There's some of them, but none of them have come down yet. I think a lot of them are into mountain bikes, really.
Right, okay.
I think they're more interested in that than motorbikes, because, I don't know, I think it's a bit easier to jump on a mountain bike than a motorbike.
Yeah, fair enough. How about you, Harry? What are some of the things you say to your friends or people on the outside of the sport when you say, oh, I'm doing trials? How do you sell them on the benefits?
Just talking about, like George said, riding with your friends and the challenge. If you want to beat, it's like anything in sport. If you want to beat the person you're riding against or what, whoever it is, it's a great thing to do, because it's not, it's, you get to a section, it's this one's this. If you're at a club trial level, you have a crack with your mates saying, this one's this section and I want to beat you on here and all this, if you're messing about with your mates, which for me, I think is really important, is to enjoy the sport, because if you're not enjoying it, it won't ever become anything out of it.
Yeah. Do you find it some days, as you were saying earlier, you've had better days than others. Do you find it easy to forget a bad day on the bike, or do you not let it affect you? Do you find it easy to move on because I'm still on a bike?
Yeah, bad days for me, it's only been in competition, and you have a bad day and you've got, like Dad said, you've got to leave it there. You can't take it to the next trial or the next section and think, I need to make up that now. You think, I need to clean slate, try as best you can and clean this section that I'm riding or the next trial and just go from there, really. I've never had a problem from having a bad day and thinking, I had a bad day last time, I need to have a good day this time. It's always been another day on the bike. And
Well said. And Dan, maybe I'll ask it slightly differently. As a parent who's looking to get into a sport where they can take their kids along, I don't imagine there's much other than trials that really allows for that sort of family environment. Like you mentioned earlier, you're going to be riding now alongside your boys this year in the British Championship. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's definitely the the icing on the cake is riding trials with your lads. We go down to the British Championship this weekend, and there'll be myself and my brother and my two boys. So that's father and uncle and two lads riding in the same competition. We've also got my mother coming down, so she's going to be fairly proud of that as well. She's watching her two sons and grandsons ride a British Championship trial all at the same time, which is not many sports you can get that involvement in, I don't think. Yeah, I think for me, trials is a very family-oriented sport. I think it's one of the friendliest sports you can be involved in. And I think that as a parent, you can't introduce your children into something as competitive but safe competition, because it's the speed element's taken out of it, and with speed becomes risk and injury. Whereas with trials, it's a little bit slower, and touch wood, you're not going to get serious injuries with the trials. And it gives the kids a good sense of, I don't know how to put it, if you're all stood at a section and you're all discussing a single line, so you're all looking at something and you're sharing your own views, and so it's a really good social interaction with each other. It's not like you're stood hiding all the information yourself. There's very few trials that hide information from other trials riders. You all go there and you all look at something and try and solve how to clean it. Because ultimately, when you jump on that bike, it's you and the bike who have got to do it. It's not, you've got to conquer the section. So trials is a very friendly and very nice environment to be involved in.
Absolutely. And you get to chat for people from all around the world as well when you're doing it on podcasts. So obviously you guys are making a full-on attack in this season and seasons past. So we need to thank our sponsors for all that. So I imagine you've got a long list there.
Yes, we've a very loyal set of sponsors that have helped us over the years, even from when Ben and I were riding World and European Championships. It ranges from Apico Factory Racing, who have helped the boys since they were very young, since they were 6, 7, 8 years old. And that was started by Iro Vesterinen and Diane. And now is spearheaded by, Apico Factory Racing has been going a long time. Iro started it back in the day, and he's now taken over by new owners. You'll have to cut this bit, I'm afraid, David, because I'm just trying to think of the names.
That's fine. No worries.
So it's Anna and Dylan are the new owners of Pico Factory Racing, and they've been fantastic. They've helped the lads from a very young age. Hebo Factory clothing, boots, BTUK, which is John Lampkin, Michelin Tires, Rental Handlebars, they've always supported myself and my brother, and they've carried on with the boys. Liquid Moly Oils, Boyson Factory Racing, Twin Air, U-Suite, which are backpacks. They supported me through my enduro career and have now continued with the boys for the trials. Bike at UK, which are suppliers of the oils. And then just on personal sponsorship, which helps us basically fund going to the European and the World and the British Championships, we've got Danny Cockshot from DC Air Conditioning, Knox Sawmills, Nigel Crowther from NMP Crowthers, Riverside Quarry, which is another trials rider called Neil Gaunt, Timberland Sheds, 331 Limited, which is actually Tim Connor. So he's the brother of Sam Connor. He's been a really good, loyal supporter of the boys. And the Goat Stall, which is actually, bizarrely enough, a bar in Austria. But he's a really prolific sponsor of motorsport in general. He helps Andreas and Manny Lettenbecker, people like that. So he's always jumped on board with us as well.
Fantastic. Oh, my God. That is a long list.
And without any of those, you know, it would make our lives so much harder. It does. And that's just fantastic for them to help us to get us out to the world in Europe.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you to all the sponsors. They make the world go round, especially in times like we've had with COVID. It's there. They need the recognition of and support, because the world stopped spinning there for a little while. Things got weird.
Yeah, it did.
but that's been great. Thank you. Thank you so much to the Hemingway family. It's been an absolute treat having you on the Trials Australia podcast. Thank you all.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
Very much enjoyed that.
Well, that's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed this Trials Australia podcast. Remember, get in touch with us with any tips, suggestions, or recommended guests via email at podcast@trials.com.au. That's all for now.